Blog Talk Radio.
Higher.
If I go any higher, only dogs will hear me.
Try.
Galileo! Galileo Piccolo!
Higher.
Jesus, how many more Galileos do you want?
One more.
Galileo!
One more.
Galileo!
Again.
Galileo!
Go on,
Galileo!
Roll the track.
Galileo!
Who even is Galileo?
Galileo Piccolo!
Are we done?
That's it. He loves you.
Welcome, everybody, to Cinema Royale. I am Travis Opson of the Punch Drunk Critics. And if you didn't recognize what that was from, what movie that was from, then I question your interest in Bohemian Rhapsody, the new Queen biopic starring Rami Malek as Freddie Mercury. Clearly, you had to have known that, obviously. And, of course, we had to start with that movie because it's in a very busy week of films. Bohemian Rhapsody is the one that I think that most people are really, really excited about. And I think the box office, which just came out a little while ago, backs that up because it had a huge debut, especially for a music biopic, which, you know, those tend to do okay, but not on these sorts of numbers. We're talking straight out of Compton level is where this thing looks like it's headed. So we'll talk about Bohemian Rhapsody in just a minute with my buddy Chris Bumbray from JoeBullet.com. We're also going to talk about Bodied, which is the new battle rap film from Joseph Kahn. And also I want to get his thoughts on Suspiria, Luca Guadagnino's remake of the Dario Argento classic. And I'll ask him if he saw The Nutcracker. I don't think that he did, but I'm going to ask him if he saw it anyway just to get his thoughts on it. I really don't want to spend any time on The Nutcracker, but it's a big film. It's a Disney movie that's out this week. So I'll ask him if he saw it. It's been a few weeks since we've been here. I haven't been able to do the show the last few weeks. I told you it was going to be a little sporadic for a while while I worked on some things that are going on with the show. At this point, what I can tell you, and I know I've been teasing it for a while, what I can tell you is at the beginning of the year, Cinema Royale will be taking place in a new venue. We'll be going back to Hashtag Studios. You might remember that from a couple years ago when I used to do the show from there, and that was always fantastic. We're picking up that again. It's going to be a little bit different, though. Not the same exact place, and it'll be a little bit different format, but yeah, that's the most I can say about it for now. So look for that early in 2019, and it's going to be, if all goes according to plan, it will be more than just audio. It will also be a live video show, live taping going on as well. So it should be a lot of fun. But like I said, I'll give you more details as that comes along, all right? And of course, in the meantime, and even afterwards, you'll always be able to find Cinema Royale here on Blog Talk Radio as part of Critical, the Movie Critics Network, our awesome network of shows, podcasts from some of the best film critics in the country, including my buddy Chris Bumbray, who has a show on there, The Beard and the Bald. What's going on, my man? How you doing?
Now, but I'm not in your country, though. I'm Canadian, my friend. Although I was in your hometown last week, though, for a wedding.
You were, and I'm disappointed that we didn't get to hang out. Last week was kind of nuts. Monday was too busy.
I am going to Sundance, though. I am going to Sundance, so we'll hang out there, hopefully.
We'll definitely
go back.
There. If you don't go to Sundance, then it won't feel right. It won't feel like Sundance to me if you're not there. So you have to.
It looks like it's happening.
Good, good. I'm expecting another awesome lineup. In fact, I got to send my application in today. I'm going to do it today because I want to make sure
I
get
on Friday.
Yeah, I want to make sure I get on that first group of invitees, so I get the early access to the free screenings. The passes they give us. I don't want to be on that second group.
As per your question, by the way, I did indeed see the Nutcracker in the Four Realms.
Yeah. All right. Mm-hmm. Good.
Yeah.
Good. So we can talk about that too. All right. Good. So we got a busy show ahead of us. So let's just kind of jump right into it then and talk about Bohemian Rhapsody, which is the Queen biopic. Starring Rami Malek as Freddie Mercury. It's more of a Freddie Mercury biopic than Queen. It is to me, if you ask me, it is. You don't think so?
Well, I mean, I think that.
I mean,
the
focus is clearly on him. The focus is
the
more on him than anybody else. We don't go into the personal life of anybody else in the band other than him.
No, but the thing about it is, my issue with Bohemian Rhapsody, and it's really mm-hmm. funny that you mentioned the box office figures, because critics have been really mixed on this movie, but the cinema score is so audiences love it. And the thing is,
I always knew that was going to be the case because, mm-hmm. look, this is a mm-hmm. really hard movie to mess up. I mean, Queen's music is so good that even if the movie itself isn't great, you're going to have kind of a good time watching it. I mean, I knew the crowd was going to love it no matter what.
I mean, I guess, it's watching this weekend happen kind of has given me an idea of what Queen's endgame was, because I really had a problem with the movie. The fact that I thought it was so tame and watered down and vanilla and I didn't think that Mercury's homosexuality was handled particularly well. But, the thing is, I was at work the other day at my day job in Montreal, and the woman I work with, she was like, I'm taking my 13-year-olds to see Bohemian Rhapsody tonight. Is it okay for them? And I was like, oh, yeah, totally. And she was like, oh, great. And it was just, because she wants to expose them to Queen. And I was just thinking, I was like, well, I guess if that's what the goal of the movie is to kind of bring Queen to a new generation, then, yeah, I mean, it's successful. And it is a movie mm-hmm. that, kids can go and see. That said, I feel that there's a much more interesting Queen movie that could have been made. But then again, this is the 20th, I hesitate to even say the Bryan Singer version. It's the 20th Century Fox Queen version of the Queen story rather than would have been cool if it was like the Spike Lee version of Queen, or not Spike Lee, or Martin Scorsese, the Martin Scorsese version of Queen,
Even the Sacha Baron Cohen version. Cause I mean,
liked to have seen that. Yeah. I mean,
he wanted a dirtier version, a more works and all version of it. That was one of the reasons why he left. The band didn't want to make that movie.
No, and they're protecting their legacy. I guess I can see why. And and the thing is, Freddie Mercury is not around to defend himself either. But I found in the movie, I really didn't care for the way they kind of made it look like his homosexuality was like this dark thing that he had to, that led him down the road to ruin and stuff like that. Like, I didn't like that. Like, it was this bad thing that led him towards, his ultimate fate. And it was just, it was the fact that he was so excessive, and also the fact that, he happened to be doing all this stuff at a time, when the AIDS crisis had started, and many, many, many people, and they weren't necessarily people that lived to excess, got fucked over by this, and it was kind of, that was the reality of the era as a gay man. But it was just, I found that, Queen wouldn't have been Queen and Freddie Mercury wouldn't have been Freddie Mercury if he hadn't been gay, and you can hear the kind of that aspect in all their music, and I feel like that could have maybe been celebrated a bit more, because, it's kind of daring for a star, for a rock star from the 70s and 80s to be kind of more or less out of the closet. I mean, I don't think Freddie Mercury ever really posed as heterosexual. I don't know. I mean, it was kind of like, I was watching with a friend of mine who was telling me that, the part where they go into like the leather club, he was like, this looks like something that, my grandfather would have thought of gay life as his horror story or something. Didn't seem very realistic. They make it look kind of twisted. And I found Alan Leach's performance as the manager really over the top.
And one thing we can definitely agree on is that casting him as the villainous gay, because,
oh, yeah.
the villainous manipulative gay, because there has to be one.
Yeah.
And he's it. And it, his character in particular felt really, really unseemly to me. And I feel
and
like
leads him down the path, right?
Yeah.
Leads him down the path to being gay and the path to like destruction. And it was just kind of like, and you know, my boss at the website, my co-host on Beard and the Bald, you know, feels differently than I do. Paul, he keeps telling me, he's like, well, there was the Jim Hutton character who was portrayed very positively. And it's like, yes, he was, but it was just, you know, the thing is, I don't know.
The 2 minutes of that character that we get.
and it was just, you know, so convenient, you know, and it was, I don't know. I mean, I really had issues with it. But that said,
I feel like some of that stuff you're talking about was incidental on their part. Like, I don't feel like they were trying to say that.
Oh, no. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Took him down the road to ruin. I think they were trying to just, you know, depict that it was something that needed to be kept hidden because it would probably end his career. And, you know, and that's the way it was for a lot of people. And I get that's what they were trying to do, but it didn't come off that way. It didn't come off as they intended.
Well, it was clumsy. You know, and the thing is, if it had been done, it's one of those movies, like, if that had been made in 1993, that exact movie, I would have thought that, wow, this is really progressive, right? But then you look at it now through a modern perspective, like, it's funny, it's like watching Philadelphia now, you know? Philadelphia, you never even see Tom Hanks and Antonio Banderas kiss, like, the camera cuts away. And it's just, that seems like such a pussy move now. But back then, that was, you know, that was the thing they had to do in order to get a PG-13. And it's just kind of, you know, so it kind of feels like that, like a movie from another era. But, you know, all that, I don't think, though, that Queen is necessarily homophobic. I don't think they are at all. And I don't think that was the intention.
No.
But I think that this movie, though, is the victim of the fact that, you know, two very different directors were involved. There was no clear guiding force in the editing room at the end, and it was just everybody had to have their say. Queen had to have their say. The studio had to have their say. Rami Malek clearly had to have his say, you know. And it was just, and they were probably choosing takes and stuff like that. And it was like, especially Alan Leach's character, I found that, like, in some stuff he was playing him more nuanced, and then in other stuff he's very cartoon. And I feel like that's, you know, that's one director versus another director getting a performance out of them. And it was just kind of, you know, it's a mess. But that said, that most, you know, we know all the shit that went on behind the scenes for this movie, though, because we're kind of in the industry and we're kind of hepped up on what was happening. Most general audiences don't know and don't care. So, and I can see them loving the movie. And the fact is, if you go to it just for the music and for the performances, it's really worth seeing, and you'll have a good time. And the Live Aid concert at the end is great.
The Live Aid concert, for anybody who hasn't seen it yet, and I'm not going to spoil it or anything. I mean, there's not really anything to spoil, but it's like 11 straight minutes. I mean, it's like, it's almost a full set, and it really
is
a piece of filmmaking. And Rami Malek is terrific in that part, too, as well. I mean, I think he's actually.
They filmed, apparently.
That's
that
amazing.
Was the first thing they filmed, which is crazy.
That's amazing. You'd think that'd be something you'd want to build up to, but no, that's crazy. In general, I like Malick's performance. I do find the prosthetic really, really distracting. The mouth prosthetic is really distracting to me. But I think he did the best with that role that he could. And I think overall, it's a fairly well-rounded performance by him. And I'm curious to see how the reaction is going to be to it as we get closer to award season, like if he starts getting notices for it or anything like that. I'm very curious about that.
I feel like he'll definitely get a Golden Globe nomination.
Uh-huh.
Oscar, I'm not so sure about, but you know, it depends. I mean, I find Oscar now, it's so hard to predict. You know, there are great. I find, you know, it's funny, last year it was really kind of Best Actress was like the really fucking crazy race. This year, I find it's Best Actor. And, you know, but the thing is, there are so many really great performances that I don't necessarily think are going to be nominated. You know, like for me, Ethan Hawke
good.
First Reformed. Like, to me, that's
so,
like,
good.
The best performance of the year. Is he even going to get nominated, though? Did enough people see that movie? You know, same thing, Joaquin Phoenix and You Were Never Really Here. You know, I mean, that's an
like
amazing performance.
I feel like First Reformed is like indie spirit. Like, it'll get that, it'll like win that or something.
Yeah. So I don't even know if it's on the, I don't even know if that's on the radar of the Academy. That's the thing, you know, and it's just, that was like the greatest performance of the year.
It needs a re-release at this time of year.
Yeah.
Like, so people don't forget it. It needs a re-release. Mm-hmm. So many movies are coming out again in these last few weeks of the year just to kind of remind you. That's one of those films I have to get a re-release because it's so good. Mm-hmm. And he's amazing in that role. God, he's so good.
Yeah. That's honestly the best performance of the year for me. But, you know, we'll see. I'm sure Bradley Cooper is going to get nominated. I wouldn't be surprised if Chadwick Boseman got nominated. You know, it's one of those things. Like, I don't know. For me, it would be Ethan Hawke, though.
If they're pushing for Viggo Mortensen for Green Book, then he's going to get in.
He will. For sure he will. Yeah. That movie, I think that's going to get a whole bunch of nominations.
It's going to get a lot. And I think it deserves it. I really did enjoy that, but
I did too.
Yeah. But going back to Bohemian Rhapsody, I mean, yeah, this was one that I thought was always going to be a crowd pleaser, even if the movie wasn't very good. And I'm not going to say that it's a bad movie. I actually enjoyed myself quite a bit.
Oh, so did I.
But it's a movie that would be really hard to mess up as long as you had an ample amount of Queen music in there. And they did. And there were still a lot of songs in there that weren't in there that I wish they could have fit in there.
Yeah, one of my favorites was in there. Tie him on the down.
They didn't have Flash Gordon in there. I was like, come on, man.
I wish they had had a whole section where it was like where they were doing the Flash Gordon soundtrack.
Yeah.
And a bunch of drugs, and then the Highlander soundtrack. You know, that happened after Live Aid.
I love
the Highlander soundtrack. Those are great songs. Although they do have a couple of the songs in the movie.
There's so much. There's so much more they could have done, and they did put in a lot in terms of music. They put in a lot, and there's still so much more they could have done. But it's a solid movie to me. Is it a great movie? No, but like I said, I always thought it was going to be a crowd pleaser, and it is. And clearly, that's what people are taking from it. It opened with $50 million this week, which is phenomenal for a music biopic
for that kind of movie. Yeah,
yeah, and $91 million. So $141 million. Opening weekend overall.
It's interesting
worldwide.
to see now though how much like the musical is back though. I mean between Bohemian Rhapsody and A Star Is Born and Greatest Showman and then probably Mary Poppins Returns like and La La Land like the musical has really come back in a big way.
They should re-release Rock of Ages now and see how it does.
I feel like it would probably do better than it did back then, but
I think it would.
What
too.
Else is yeah.
Yeah, I think it would too. Alright, let's move on from Bohemian Rhapsody and let's talk about Suspiria and honestly I really want to get your opinion on this one because I know how I feel about it, but I don't think all that deeply about this movie the way some people do because I didn't really care about the original all that much, and I didn't really care.
Neither did I.
I didn't really care they're making this a remake of it. Sort of a remake. I think it's more of a reimagining than a remake.
Yeah,
but
I think you're
right. Let me play a quick clip from Suspiria for our audience out there.
I'm going to ask Caroline to work on your jumps with you. Yours are nowhere near good enough yet. I'll have to build you up.
So that I can dance the protagonist when you perform it.
I need to see you dance at this level time and time again.
I can do it.
Olga made Falk seem like such heavy lifting. She never understood the heart of Falk. She lacked conviction. I'm relieved she's gone. Thank you for your help with that.
Okay, that was a clip from Suspiria. And, you know, honestly, Chris, I almost fell asleep during that clip. Which is exactly what I was doing when I was watching the movie. I was bored to death watching this film, and I shouldn't have been.
Yeah.
Not as if it's not full of terrific images and some truly gory scenes, a lot of striking visuals in this film. I shouldn't have been as bored as I was, but I found myself like fighting sleep, and I think a part. Luca Guadagnino, who's a director that I generally am okay with. There's not been a film that he's truly loved except for A Bigger Splash. And he's very artistic, and I think he's one of those directors who, in a way, a lot like Cuarón is, where he's so in love with everything that he shoots that he tends to kind of luxuriate in everything that he does. And this movie is kind of like that too. But in this case, it made it feel kind of plodding to me.
Yeah.
So it wasn't working for me in the way that I think it worked for a lot of other people.
I agree with you. You know, I mean, the thing is, I had a bit of a different experience with Suspiria because I actually got a link to see it. So I got a screener link and I watched it last night at home. And the thing is, I kind of wish I'd seen it in theaters because I think it's probably the kind of movie that you know, you need to kind of be wrapped up in because, you know, watching it at home, yeah, I did find it kind of boring at times. And I took breaks. I took like bathroom breaks and, you know, I was eating a pizza while I was watching it with my girlfriend, you know, and it was just kind of, you know, so it was a little bit different. We were, you know, with some crosstalk, you know, so I didn't, you know, if I'd seen it in theaters, I might have been wrapped up in it a little bit more, you know, but it was just, like you said, you know, I mean, I'm not a huge fan of the original. The original is fine, but it's just, it's not that much like the original. There are things about the new one that I really liked. I loved Tom York's soundtrack. I liked some of the performances, not all of them. I thought Dakota Johnson was actually quite boring in it, but I liked Tilda Swinton,
she's very, very plain in this movie. She has certain roles that works for her. Like it works for her in like 50 Shades. You know, it doesn't work for her in this. I think it worked for her in A Bigger Splash because that character
was
kind of disaffected. So it kind of worked for her. It doesn't really work for her in this.
Yeah. I mean, I like the old man, you know, Lutz Ebersold or whatever it is, with a faux actor name that they're giving. Like I found she was good though, you know, and it was, and I liked the imagery. I really liked the dance, the extended dance sequence. I liked the ending, like the kind of all out ending. I thought that was great, but it was just, you know, but for a 2.5 hour movie, I didn't find that the historical setting too, and the parallels to Nazi Germany, I didn't think that worked extremely well.
It didn't help for anything for me. In fact, that stuff took me out of it. Like, why are you like, I'm actually interested in the Bader Meinhof stuff.
Oh yeah, me too.
General,
it is. It's fascinating.
But not,
yeah.
But I don't feel like connecting this movie to it added anything of value.
No, not at all. And it was just kind of, you know, it's just window dressing at a certain point. And, you know, and you know, but I've always found Luca Guadagnino's movies like that. You know, the only one of his movies that I ever really unreservedly loved was Call Me By Your Name, which I thought was a masterpiece. Bigger Splash I liked. I Am Love I liked, but they're not, to me, they're not great movies. I find he's a visual director. He doesn't have the command over the plot that others do. Although Call Me By Your Name is the exception because he had that amazing screenplay by James Ivory, you know, and great source material to go back to. And it was just, but Suspiria, I found it was just kind of, you know, a director that was really kind of getting carried away and doing exactly the kind of movie that he wanted to do. And, you know, fair enough. And I think he made a beautiful looking movie, but it was just kind of, you have to watch it and think, you know, who's the audience for this film, you know, and it was, and it's funny because, you know, my girlfriend thing probably
that
liked
exactly
it more
the
than
conversation
I did.
We had after the movie was, who was this movie for?
My girlfriend seemed to like it more than I did though. She was kind of like, you know, I was like, I don't know if I liked it that much. And she was like, oh really? And she goes, I don't know how I felt about it, but she seemed to be kind of leaning more towards positive, you know, and it was funny because I was like, you know, for me, I was a little, you know, not super into it while we were watching it. But then again, though, I can say that I honestly wish I'd seen it in theaters because I think that watching it at home, you know, with my cat running around and, you know, and having a pizza, you know, probably took me out of the movie a bit, you know,
we're going inside the Bunbury home today, folks.
That's why, though, I think at this time of year, you know, whenever the screeners and stuff like that come out, I always try to see stuff theatrically because I can't get as into it at home. You know, for me, it's easier to watch a show or something like that, you know, where it's in doses. I still like to see movies theatrically, though, and it's just kind of, you know, I don't know. I was fine with it, but I can't say that I really loved it. Like I'm very, very mixed on it. Negative, I would say.
It seems that women are connecting with it more for obvious reasons.
Yeah,
I mean, there's
sure
themes of
sure
women's empowerment in this movie and kind of, you know, there's this sort of whole post-World War II guilt going on, a thing going on as well. But but it's mostly, you know, men taking the hit for it to happen, which they should. But women sort of getting their revenge for a lot of stuff that's happened since then. But yeah, so it seems to be connecting with more with women than it is with men. And I get that. I've always felt Dino's movies have always had more of a feminist slant to them, you know,
sure.
Which is fine.
Yeah,
which is fine. I mean, that's
I
cool.
Think so.
So you know, like I said, this movie is probably going to connect with other people more than it did for me. People I know who loved the original movie have also seemed to like this one. So I guess that's a good thing.
Now that's something interesting though, because that I've noticed people seem to be 50-50. Some are really not liking it, and some are really liking it. You know, and it's it's not that much like the original though. It's really not. You know,
Witches in a Ballet. I mean, that's really about it. There's not a whole lot else.
It does have some kind of, anyway, I was fine with it. It was just kind of not really, you know, I think I was anticipating it, and I thought I would connect to it more than I did. And I just didn't. It kind of took me out of it. But that said, you know, if I'd seen it in theaters, I might've felt differently.
Yeah, I agree with you. All right, let's take a quick break. And when we come back, you and I are going to talk about Bodied, which I really want to get your opinion on. I know
great movie.
We both saw it, and I'll get your thoughts on the Nutcracker. And before we come back, I'm gonna let people know that the clip from Bodied, vulgar as hell. So just be prepared for that, because I couldn't find anything that didn't have a ton of vulgarity.
Jeez, Louise.
So we'll be right back.
We don't believe you, cause we the people are still here in the rear, yo, we don't need you. You ain't a killing off good young nigga move. When we get hungry, we eat the same fucking food, the ramen noodle. This simple voodoo is so maniacal, reliable to pull a juju. The irony is that this bad bitch in my lap, she don't tell me she make money, she don't study that. She gon' give it to me, ain't gon' tell me none of that. She gon' take the brain away the place she sit on that. But do some signs with it. Don't try to rhyme with it. VH1 has a show that you can waste the time with. Guilty pleasure takes the edge off reality. And for a salary, I'll probably do that just sporadically. The OG Gucci boots are smitten with the quantity. The IRS quantity and naked game common.
Battle rap is not boxing. It's a street fight.
Words are weapons.
We battle rappers. We battle each other and disrespect each other in the ring as rappers.
If you go off, you a legend for life.
Face to say obscenely racist things under the guise of competition.
You know how sensitive the climate is towards racism and appropriation. The administration is now under a lot of pressure to act.
You know, some things that I'll never understand about this rap stuff is, to shoot this, shoot that.
Yo,
shut the fuck up!
Little squirmy little Reddit blogger. Another Eminem imposter refers to Elton John as his second father. Bob Saget, Rick Moranis, Kelly Osbourne, white trash, genetic monster. Probably conceived in the back of a Led Zeppelin concert.
If Harry Potter had sex with Jeffrey Dahmer, you'd be their lesbian daughter. The fuck are you, a little fucking state prison fucking rape victim? He's a new face of racism. I'm surprised he didn't show up here today with a slave with him chained to him. He hates African-American culture because he was raised different. He hates Clinton, Abe Lincoln, pretty much anybody that can relate with him except Blake Griffin. He feels a little bit more safe with him because they share the same pigment. Bitch, hip-hop has been for minorities. It's never been for you geeky asses. Matter of fact, what are these, your little fucking reading glasses you need for your English classes? Man, give me that shit. Man, I'll stomp these into pieces and fragments, and now you can keep them. He can have this. Now you get to complete your dream of being this genius mathematician, because everything you see is in fractions. Now get the fuck out of here, you little fucking dweeby.
This story makes me laugh every time I hear that. That is a clip from the movie Bodied, which is produced by Eminem. Yeah, I think you can see why. And the movie is directed by Joseph Kahn, who I'm just a big fan of Detention. Chris. I don't know if you remember that film from a few years ago.
Really liked Detention. I saw that at the Fantasia Film Festival. I thought that was super underrated.
Yeah, I really like that movie, and I like this one as well.
Me too.
He did Torque, right? I didn't like Torque.
I don't think he liked Torque either, though.
I don't like Torque either. That's true. Detention is full of
Torque riffs, like people talking about how much Torque sucks.
Yeah, that's true. It does tend to make fun of Torque.
Talk about a guy, though, that really had to crawl his way back, though, eh? I mean, because that movie really screwed him over. But, he's got that music video money, though, from directing all those, like, Britney Spears videos and stuff like that.
Yep.
So he was able to kind of pull himself up by his bootstraps. But, it's funny, though, when you talk about Bodied, Travis, I'm going to tell you something that's really going to shock you.
Uh-oh.
I don't know much about hip-hop.
What?
And I don't know much about battle rap. It's funny. Oh, I didn't necessarily grow up with it. But I have to say, though, I really liked this movie. I wish, though, I'd seen it in a different, the thing is, you and I talked about this at Sundance. Bodied premiered had its world premiere at TIFF at Midnight Madness. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently the audience went mental for it. Those Midnight Madness audiences, 700 people just going crazy, and they loved it. And apparently every screening was sold out, and every screening was nuts. At Sundance, it was like a private kind of free screening, and it was for a different crowd. And the thing about it was that I thought it was so interesting.
We had to get like special invites to it because it wasn't it was like, okay, it's super special. All right.
But the audience was very cool on it at Sundance. And I was wondering why it hadn't gotten in, because Joseph Kahn had talked on Twitter about how Bodied hadn't gotten into Sundance. And what happened was basically YouTube paid to have this thing. And, I can see why after that screening, why it hadn't gotten in, though, because the thing about it is that at TIFF, you had a mix of people. You had an urban audience, you had a white audience, you had a black audience, you had all kinds of people coming in to see it, right? And people that could empathize with any of the characters. Now, the thing about Sundance, though, it's a very white, she rich audience. It really is. I hate to say it, Travis, but you're in kind of the minority in that town. I mean,
I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah. And the thing is, though, they're all well-intentioned liberal people, but the movie makes fun of them like crazy and says a lot of shit about them. That's very true.
Is a very well-intentioned progressive white dude, and he's inadvertently, quite racist throughout the entire movie.
And they kind of take the piss out of that, and they say a lot of things that are very kind of true about those people, and I don't think they liked seeing themselves being made fun of. I think they really kind of were taken aback by it, and that's why the audience seemed kind of really cool towards it, not as much as I thought. I mean, I thought I was one of the only people I was really kind of laughing when I saw it in the theater, but I really liked that movie, though. I thought Bodied was really good and a surprise kind of coming out for Joseph Kahn. I wish they'd released it sooner, though. I feel like they've kind of lost momentum by waiting like over a year since it played TIFF, and it's just, why did it have to take so long, especially if YouTube bought it? Like, they really should have put this out early. But anyway, whatever.
I really feel like, and I'm glad that it got distribution at all through YouTube.
Sure.
But by the same token, I feel like this is one of those movies that if it had a traditional theatrical release and a strong social media campaign, it could have been like one of those sleeper hit movies. Like, I just really feel
like
it could have been.
A24 had bought it. It would have been a good A24 movie,
Yes, you push it like you push Spring Breakers or something like that.
As being
counterculture, you push it that way. You push that it's not for the faint of heart. You push it, and I think a lot of people would turn around to it. You get Eminem to do a couple of promos for it, and this movie would take off, I think. But
it's provocative. It's very, very provocative.
It is. It definitely is. And I think it's really smart about some of the observations it makes. Do they all kind of come together in the end? No, not exactly. But I think along the way, it makes really smart observations. And as someone who is familiar with battle raps and is kind of grown up in hip hop culture and knows this stuff, I mean, that is the way it is. I mean, it is ugly. It's dirty. It is. You want a really great battle rap. You're surprised that they haven't come to blows. You're just kind of like, you know, this movie felt as authentic to that as anything I've seen. So I really, really love, and he had help from other rappers, you know, people who are in the game, who are in this life, and you can see it. I mean, I really, really enjoyed this film a lot, and I want a lot of people to see it. I wish it was
finished. I think I'm a little bit behind the times on battle rap. I was watching Breakin' on TCM not long ago, and I was like, this to me, this seems like a film of today. This is what the kids are going through: dance fighting, break dance fighting.
Yeah, that Boogaloo Shrimp guy, you know, and he's
Boogaloo Shrimp. I love.
He's still with it. But yeah, I really hope people get a chance to check out Body. It's on YouTube right now, so if you can go and check that out, because I think you're going to
really on YouTube now. How do they? You see, that's the problem though. They I don't even know that it. I didn't even know it had come out though. That's crazy.
Yeah, it's out on YouTube Red, so they're subscription, they're pay joint. So if you it's YouTube's premium basically. So you got to pay for it, but yeah, you can watch it that way.
I don't think we got it. I don't think we have it in Canada. I don't think Body's out in Canada yet. I think maybe we have a different distributor.
Nah, that sucks. Well, yeah. I think Neon has rights to it too, so maybe Neon is handling international. I don't know, but I know it's on YouTube right now. So, but yeah, all right. So let me get your thoughts. I didn't get any clips for this one. So the Nutcracker in the Four Realms, which is Disney's reimagining of the classic Nutcracker story. To me, this was. I came out of it and I, you know, we always get asked like immediately afterwards what our thoughts are, and usually I try to brush that stuff off, but I was just like,
oh yeah, me too.
I was like, you know what, it's perfectly fine. I think this kind of was reflected in my review. I was like, Disney did what they needed to do. If they wanted to make a movie that will be on people's shelves and that they'll take out, you know, on Christmas morning and just play in the background when they're opening presents, then yeah. And it did its job. It did its job fine. Otherwise, there's very little that's memorable about this movie to me. It's a fairly straightforward adventure movie starring Mackenzie Foy, who, you know, gets whisked away to the Four Realms. She has to fight somebody who's evil, and there's a bit of a twist at the end, but, you know, but whatever. But there's very little about this movie that remains memorable for me.
And that's really all
I have to say about it. It looks great, you know, but all Disney movies do. Like, all their live-action fairy tales, and this one does too. But that's, like, where it begins and ends for me.
You know, it's funny. The thing that's most memorable to me is the ending when it comes up, directed by Lassie Hallström and Joe Johnson. You know, what a weird pairing. You know, the director of Cider House Rules and the director of, you know, Jumanji. And it's just, the thing is, but it's clear, though. I mean, if you read about the movie, that Lassie Hallström made this kind of elegant movie that was very influenced by the ballet and was kind of, you know, was kind of lovely. And then Disney was like, nah, it needs more action. And then they hired, you know, Joe Johnson to come in and turn it into like an adventure movie. And it's just, you can tell it's just so all over the place. Right. Like I was quite enjoying the first act of the movie. And I really liked the music. I really liked the ballet stuff. I liked the Misty Copeland dancing. I thought that was great. Loved the end credits where the guy's like breakdancing to the Nutcracker. I thought that was actually kind of interesting. You know, it was a fresh take, you know, and it was.
Yeah,
and
it felt
I liked
like
that
a different movie,
of the movie,
though. That felt like a different movie.
It felt like a better movie, but it felt like it felt like an arty movie that like Disney would have had a hard time getting anybody to go see. And I mean, they're already having a hard time because it tanked this weekend, you know, and I'm not surprised because I think it was too slow for kids. And I hated Keira Knightley's voice in it. I didn't like, you know, Helen Mirren seemed embarrassed. And it's a really kind of flawed movie, but fascinating because you can really see like what it's like when a studio kind of ends up taking over a movie and completely changing what it was. And, you know, and it is kind of fascinating to watch that, but it's not, you know, it's just a different thing.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I agree. I actually didn't find too many, I didn't see the seams where Hallström and Johnston kind of like where one began.
Oh,
and one
I really did, man. I just I didn't, thought it was the whole second half felt like a different movie.
Yeah, I thought that Johnson did a fairly decent job of mimicking Hallstrom for the most part. But yeah, I mean, I think that Hallstrom was trying to do action. I think they were both trying to make an adventure movie, maybe just different kinds of adventure movies.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, this movie is just underwhelming. I mean, it's not. I don't think
Hallstrom knows how to make an adventure movie, though. I mean, you don't hire a guy like that to do an adventure movie. He really don't. He's not kind of director.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
That's a good point. So. You might be right, but like I said, I think it ticks the boxes. I guess if Disney just wanted to make a holiday movie that people will buy, because I think a lot of people will buy it because it's a holiday movie, and that's why they'll get it. But I think that's where it kind of ends for it. So, but yeah, nothing spectacular with the Nutcracker. Before you go, Chris, I want to ask you about a couple of things that happened this week. Did you see London Fields?
Yes.
What did you think about the director who came out and basically is agreeing with everybody who is killing his movie right now? I did not see London Fields. One of our other writers saw it and just destroyed it. Just thought it was atrocious. But I didn't watch it. But what do you think about Matthew Cullen, who's coming out and basically agreeing with everybody who's trashing his own movie?
I mean, it was clearly like a tortured production because, you know, it was booked to play TIFF in 2015. And I remember I was there and somebody had seen it. One of my friends had seen it because it never got to actually screen, but they were apparently sending out screener links or there was maybe a press screening and had seen it. And then right before it was supposed to premiere, I think the day of it got pulled from the festival because Cullen was saying that it wasn't his version. I mean, I think he's probably not the easiest guy in the world to work with, but I also think that, you know, that there's a lot of weird stuff going on with the producers. You know, one of them I think is under investigation for like a big crime or something like that, for some big mismanagement thing. And, you know, and I think that also the chaos of Amber Heard and Johnny Depp's relationship really did a number on that movie. You know, I think she was supposed to do a lot of,
she filed lawsuits as well.
I think she was supposed to do a lot of nude scenes for the movie, which would have made sense because it's that kind of movie. And I think that she withdrew permission, so they had to take that out. And I think they had to, which kind of is hard when you're making an erotic thriller, you know, and Johnny Depp, I think, was very, you know, very all over that film. And he's in it too. Johnny Depp has a sizable role in the film. And it's weird seeing them act out this kind of like sadomasochistic relationship kind of,
funny
the acting
he's uncredited. Like they have him listed.
Oh yeah.
They don't
but
want
I mean,
you
it,
to
it's
know.
A prominent role. It's a prominent role. And it's just like some of the acting is really bad. Like Jim Sturgess' performance is unbelievably grating. You know, and it's just like, I don't think Cullen is a very good director. And apparently his own version of the movie is out like in a couple of theaters. It would have been interesting to see it, but I just don't know that I could ever sit through that movie again. And it was a really bad film, like a disaster. And I'm shocked that it ever got into TIFF in the first place. Like, I don't understand how that movie got into TIFF. They must have. I think what had happened was they wanted to get Amber Heard and Johnny Depp to show up on the red carpet. Johnny Depp was already going for Black Mass. And I think that was it. I think he probably pulled some thing where he's like, if you want me to come, you're going to have to bring in her movie. And this is like, I think it was a Star Trip type thing. And they booked it.
As I do.
Pear-shaped.
You know, as well as I do, when it comes to festivals, you know, it's all about what will sell tickets as well.
Yeah, and who will show up. Well, I mean, you know, at TIFF this year, canceled the premiere of Galveston, the Ben Foster, Elle Fanning movie, because neither of them were going to show up for the premiere. And they pulled it like 2 days before, and they replaced it with a Private War, which is so strange because now that movie, which was like obviously a movie that hadn't been able to get in the first wave, is getting crazy Oscar buzz and really good reviews.
Yep. I've heard it.
You know?
I've heard
so
it's good. Every
it is
single.
Good. I mean, it's.
Every single screening I've had a conflict with. And in fact, they're screening it again here tomorrow, and I've got a conflict because they're showing it opposite the girl in the spider's web. So I'm like, well, I can't see this Private War again.
Wednesday night in Montreal, Wednesday night, the Grinch, girl in the spider's web, and Overlord are all playing at the same time.
Yeah. This
one screening each.
Ugh, that's
bullshit.
I've got tomorrow. I think I also have Wreck-It Ralph too. I need to see. So I got to interview the directors.
Yeah. We don't have that one for a while.
And I got to see Overlord, and then I have I have The Grinch on Tuesday, so it's like, oh my god, another busy week.
You know, but, which movie I'm looking forward to seeing?
Which one?
I must break you.
I
Creed
just saw
two,
it,
man.
I just saw it a few days ago.
What? You saw it?
Yeah, I saw it. Cause I interviewed Stephen Caple and Florian Montagnu, the guy who plays Draco's son.
Oh man, how so? Is it good?
You know, I can't really say.
Okay.
I'll message you after the show.
Oh man, better be good.
Yeah. All right. So another thing I want to ask you about, what do you make of this Ridley Scott going on to try to make Gladiator 2? I mean, I remember. I remember, you know, the Nick Cage script. I remember all the
Nick Cage,
jazz
not
about
Nick Cage.
That.
Nick Cage. No,
Nick Cage.
Nick Cage script would have been mental.
That script would have been nuts if he had made that movie.
Yeah.
But do you think he's actually going to make this happen? I mean, I think he might.
It sounds like it could happen. I mean, it's not Russell Crowe's not going to be in it. That's for sure.
No.
It's, you know. I could see it. I could see them doing it kind of like a, I don't know. I mean, it's being written. I guess if the script is strong enough, they want it to be Lucius. So I guess it could be any generic actor. I don't know. It's just, you know, the thing is to me, like you really need a strong, strong, strong lead to be able to pull that movie off, you know? And that was the thing. Russell Crowe really kind of nailed those period epic movies. Like I think he's unique in that aspect. Like, I don't think it's every actor that can really land a movie like that. And so that's the thing. So it comes down to whether or not they're going to be able to find another Russell Crowe. And I think that's, you know, easier said than done. And that's the thing. Like, they really have to find an actor that can play and pull off that kind
Jay
of role.
Courtney.
And
here comes Jay Courtney. They're going to go on with
God.
Right.
God.
You know,
no, I mean, with Ridley Scott, he'll be able to get like a great actor, but it's just like, I don't know that there's anybody that really has that mix of, you know, physicality.
I'm not really kidding when I say Jay Courtney. You know, I know it's funny, but I'm not really kidding. Not only does he have experience with that era because he did Spartacus, but he doesn't look that far different from the kid who played Lucius in the movie in Gladiator. You know, the "I shall cheer for you" Spaniard kid. He doesn't look that. It looks plausible that it could be him growing up.
Not my choice of a lead.
He's not my choice either, but I'm just saying I'm not kidding
the
when I think
hot star power of Jai Courtney.
I'm not kidding when I think it could be him. So I mean, if it happens, remember you heard it here first.
I could see maybe like an Oscar Isaac or something like that, but maybe he's too little physically.
God, no,
I don't know.
Oh no.
Yeah.
I like Oscar Isaac a lot, but no. He needs to not do that movie. And Bad Boys 3, it is official now. It is actually happening. Are you excited even a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I like the first one a lot. I like the second one. It feels weird if Michael Bay's not doing it, though, because I feel like he's kind of, you know, like he kind of really cut his teeth on those movies. And I'm one of the few people that really likes the sequel because it was so mental. You know, I liked that it was just this insane movie where there's like the car chase and body bags are falling out, you know, and they're running them over. Like, I thought that was nuts. You know, I really liked that. So we'll see. And I mean, you know, I think it's supposed to be Joe Carnahan still, or maybe he's going to leave. He tends to leave every project, it seems. But
it's the directors who did that Snowfall TV series on FX.
Oh, I don't know. That's kind of boring. But you know, we'll see. I mean, I if it's hard R, and you know, I'd watch it.
Yeah. I mean, I'll, of course we'll watch it, but you know.
Yeah.
Of course we'll watch it. But anyway,
toned down.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm curious. I think it would take a lot to get Will Smith and Martin Lawrence to both agree to come. Well, maybe not Martin Lawrence, but it'd take a lot to get Will Smith to come back to do it.
Well,
so it's
paychecks.
True, but he's also kind of been wishy-washy on it for a while. So if they managed to get him back, I think there must be something good about that he sees in it. So
I don't know, he's
still
right.
He's still fairly choosy about the movies that he takes. Even though he did Bright, he's still fairly choosy about the movies that he takes. So, anyway. All right, my man. What's going on with the beard and the bald? How are things going with you guys?
I'm actually just about to record with Paul. He's messaging me saying to get off the phone with you so we can record. So,
tell him we got another hour left. I don't know what he's going to do.
Yeah.
Nah, tell him I said what's up, and I hope you guys have a good show. Be sure to
Thank
check
you,
out
sir.
The Bearded Bald here on Blog Talk Radio, and as part of Critical Critics Network, y'all. And run the book comments, it's a fantastic record. It's one of the things that I like. So check him out there as well. My man, I will talk to you soon. I will send you
yep.
a message as soon as it goes over about a couple of things. I saw you just messaged me about something
Better.
Else, too. So, yeah, I'll hit you up, man. All right.
Dude.
All right, thanks a lot. All right. That's my man, Chris Bumberry from JoeBull.com and the Beard and the Bald podcast. Go and check them out everywhere you can find them. And that's going to do it for our show this week. I appreciate you guys tuning in to Cinema Royale. I'm Travis Hobson of Punch Drunk Critics. You can find me every day there at PunchDrunkCritics.com. You can find me on WBAL Morning News on Friday mornings now. You can find me on News Channel 8 as well if you're here in the D.C. area. And, of course, on WETA Around Town on Channel 26, also here in D.C. Thanks a lot for tuning in to Cinema Royale. I will be back again, hopefully next week. Make this thing regular again. All right. Later.